From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present another episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank talked with journalist Mindy Bells, senior editor of World Magazine and author of They Say We Are Infidels, On the Run from ISIS with Persecuted Christians in the Middle East. Here now is Hank Hanegraaff.
Welcome to another Hank Unplugged podcast. This is the laid-back version of Hank. This is where I'm in my study as opposed to being in my studio, at least in terms of my disposition. It's laid back, it's less didactic, and the goal of this podcast, as every other podcast I do, is to bring the most interesting and influential people on the planet to you so that you can listen to their perspective, learn from their perspective, and so that we can all grow together and be more effective. And this is particularly true for Christians listening in to the podcast. We want to make a difference while there is yet time. I'm staring my own mortality in the face, and as you do that, you become more aware of the fact that every moment is sacred, every moment is important. And today, I'm just so glad to have Mindy Bells with us on the broadcast. She's influenced me in many ways. I mean, I've been reading her articles for many years. I've been very, very infatuated with her book, They Say We Are Infidels, On the Run from ISIS with Persecuted Christians in the Middle East. Mindy is an extraordinary person. She's a senior editor at World Magazine. She's been a writer for World since 1986. And she has discovered so many things as she has covered war all over the world, in the Balkans, Sudan, Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan. And she, quite frankly, has incredible courage. I mean, she's going behind the lines so that we might better, as Christians, understand the plight of Christians around the world. I can add to the list Nigeria and Egypt and Turkey. And her reporting has been published all over the place. She's been on television, in print, on radio, on podcasts like this. And I want to start out with something, Mindy, that's probably a little off track. But, I mean, here you are, a woman. You have kids. And I know you've taken a lot of heat from people that write you and say, woman with kids, a husband, what are you doing going behind the lines, putting your life in danger? Why not just stay in the home? Your response to that.
Yeah, I mean, my kids are grown now, which is a great blessing. But I was traveling, and, you know, and around the time of 9/11, when I was traveling a lot to Iraq and then later to Afghanistan, my kids were ranging in age from elementary school up to high school, with one about to go to college. And I would get letters from time to time from people, and usually it was women who would, you know, quote scripture to me and remind me that my place is in the home. And I, you know, partly I took those to heart, but I think we're all subject to, you know, under the Lord's headship is the headship of other people in our lives. And I had two wonderful editors over me and a wonderful husband alongside of me who I relied on for guidance. And we all had a sense that this was a calling I felt and a calling that they could accommodate and encourage. And so I continued to do it. And I will say this too, Hank, that there's something really wonderful about being able as a woman to step into a society, a Muslim-dominated society that tends to be very oppressive to women. And I found that, I mean, I had early on, I had encounters where I realized, you know, an American walking into a room, the first thing we do is what we, you know, we stick out our hand to shake the hand of someone that we're meeting for the first time. You can't do that in Muslim society. And I was responding that way and finding that, you know, men were literally recoiling from me because they just simply do not touch a woman who's not their wife or their sister. So I had a lot of awkward moments where I was learning. But one of the things that I learned out of that was that I had a unique opportunity. I was not privileged to be in some of the men's circles, but a unique opportunity to be in the women's circles and to see things from a woman's perspective. And that's, you know, one reason that as I got toward writing the book, one of the principal characters in that book is an Iraqi Christian woman named Insaf Safu. I flew into Baghdad with Insaf in this amazing relationship and adventure began. And that was because I was going with a woman and not going with a mayor or a city councilman or some power figure. And I was getting a different perspective. And in some ways it was richer. In some ways, I think it was an important perspective.
And when you have been traveling around the world, what do you think today is the most significant or maybe problematic place in the world? You look at the most dangerous places in the world, and typically at the top of the list you have North Korea, and then invariably the rest of the countries are Islamic countries. You've written about North Korea. What is your perspective on North Korea, on how we're handling the North Korean situation?
Well, I think it's really tricky. And, you know, I don't know that our president's tweets and sort of offhand statements and statements that seem to sort of ratchet up the tension, I don't know that that's helpful. Having said that, I think that we're facing somewhat of an inevitable crisis with North Korea. We've been walking toward this for at least a decade where we saw that they were gradually acquiring the capabilities of two things, making a nuclear bomb of some sort and also improving their missile capability, which primarily they've been able to do through regimes like Iran and to some extent Syria even. And we watched them doing that, and we knew that our choices were pretty grim, that we had to keep talking and keep negotiating, keep accommodating that, or we had to attack them because the regime was not backing down. And attacking them would instantly mean, by all kinds of military experts and various military scenarios, possibly 1 million casualties. You know, immediately they would respond by attacking South Korea. The geography, the proximity of these high density urban areas there have just made it a really problematic situation. I don't know, honestly, that we're in a different place right now. We still face really tough prospect if we are to attack North Korea. But I don't think that we can tolerate forever, not in some way, moving the dial to force their hand a little bit. And forcing their hand carries great risk. And so in one sense, I wonder sometimes if, you know, President Trump isn't, as much as I haven't liked his rhetoric, is it maybe, you know, in some ways playing a game that might ultimately be the kind of game that North Korea might respond to, that they might actually take something off the table if they truly, truly think that the United States is about to attack them. Very, very tough. What I will say in the midst of it is that one of the remarkable stories to me, and this gets to your question about toughest places in the world. One of the most remarkable things to me about North Korea is that while all of this headline-grabbing tension has been going on, there have been about 200 Americans working in North Korea, most of them American Christians, evangelical Christians, who are there because of an incredible commitment to the people of North Korea, to wanting to serve them with medicine and food and education primarily. And I've spent some time, because they all had to leave a few weeks ago, and they're hoping that they're going to be able to go back. But I've spent some time talking to some of them and their commitment to the people and their commitment now, in spite of greater risk than has been there before, is really remarkable. And that's what I find everywhere. Like when you say, what's the hardest place in the world? Hardest place in the world, maybe perhaps, is the human heart, because we know that sin and evil are running through all of our hearts, and that therefore anywhere you go is going to be a hard place. I find some of the cities of Europe, I've spent a lot of time the last 2 years in Brussels, for instance, which people think is going to become the first Muslim majority city in Europe in about 20 years, if not sooner. And I find parts of Brussels to be really, really hard, and because you have this incredible vacuum created by secularism there, and then you have Islam moving into that vacuum, and it's frightening. And then I find some of the other places that you mentioned also, Nigeria is a place where violence has just exploded in the last 5 years, and the way that Boko Haram has been able to terrorize people unchecked has been just remarkable. But then we have, similar conflicts happening in Central African Republic, is one we don't hear much about. Just horrific, horrific atrocities there. Congo, a war that's been going on now, Africa's longest war. And then, of course, the one that is probably one that I've followed most closely, one that we've heard about, one that has huge implications for the United States, is the civil war in Syria, which I never thought I would see something unravel quite so fast and quite so horrifically as it has in Syria. Syria was a beautiful country, lots of history, really amazing ancient Christian sites, as well as Jewish sites and Muslim sites, many of those that have been destroyed now. Some of the oldest marketplaces and city, the center old city of Aleppo was a World Heritage Site that was just unparalleled in the world. Had a citadel from the Crusader era, an incredible marketplace surrounding it. Very happy place, actually, in the Middle East until this war began, and now it has pretty much been destroyed. So those would be some of my hard places. But again, I always find that the church is at work in the hardest places, and that makes an incredible difference.
I want to sort of circle back to what you were saying at the beginning. When you're talking about the courage of Christians in North Korea, I still remember being in Dubai and having to indemnify an airline so that I could fly from Dubai to Tehran. And suddenly it struck me, wow, maybe I'm putting myself in a whole lot more danger than I should be putting myself into. Maybe I'm being far too cavalier. And I suppose in a small way, that experience is your experience. I mean, you've traveled all over the Middle East and you've gone behind the lines, as it were. You've put your life in danger. And now you mention the courage of these Christians who were working in North Korea, left North Korea, and want to go back, and particularly at this very, very dangerous time in human history in places like North Korea and the other places that we talked about. I think speaking to those listening in right now about the courage that we need to have as Christians, recognizing that our life is a vapor here today, gone tomorrow, that the courage of the early Christian church is what spread the gospel around the world. It's the the blood of the martyrs that becomes the seed of the church and so forth. Talk about that courage and why we cannot be wilting flowers in the face of the current conditions worldwide.
Well, I think that the gospel, if we really understand the rescue that it is for each of us individually, and then the power of the gospel and how the power that it has to transform society, and we can, you know, we know that that's true in our heads. We can look back at history and see that it's true in fact. When we look at the Reformation, when we look at perhaps the development of, say, Western Europe coming out of the Reformation, and when we look at even the founding of the United States and how much gospel teaching fueled the growth of America, fueled the economy of America, and the way that people understood that, you know, understood that the free exchange of ideas and the free exchange of our economic system, you know, that trusting the market, if you will, all of those things at base are rooted in this idea that at the end of the day, God wins.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with journalist Mindy Bells. To be a Christian in Iraq and Syria is to live in mortal danger. Churches are bombed, pastors murdered, children kidnapped. They Say We Are Infidels by Mindy Bells gives you the facts and the real-life stories from persecuted Christians who live on the run from ISIS in the Middle East. Readers will be inspired by the unshakable devotion of Christians who have lost everything and yet count it all joy for Christ. To receive your copy of They Say We Are Infidels as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. What is one of the greatest lies in the history of the world? That Islam is a religion of peace. To suggest this goes against all that is politically correct and fashionable in the Western world today. Yet truth has always been divisive, and if we don't wake up, the long-term consequences could be unthinkable. That's why we're offering They Say We're Infidels, On the Run from ISIS with Persecuted Christians in the Middle East by Mindy Bells. To be a Christian in Iraq and Syria is to live in mortal danger. Churches are bombed, pastors murdered, children kidnapped. Receive your copy of They Say We Are Infidels as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. So rapid and pandemic has been the decline of biblical literacy and spiritual discernment that our once unimaginable post-truth culture is effectively becoming an anti-truth culture. While the sun is setting on the Western Church, Islam is now the fastest growing religion in the world. This means that it's not simply enough to be aware of this threat. Christians need to wake up, stand up, and speak up. This means being able to counter the outright lies about Islam that otherwise will go unchecked with horrendous consequences. And that's what Hank Hanegraaff's book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, will enable you to do. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI. Make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. On this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, we're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, featuring Hank's recent conversation with journalist Mindy Bells, author of They Say We Are Infidels, On the Run from ISIS with Persecuted Christians in the Middle East. To receive your copy of They Say We Are Infidels as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and journalist Mindy Bells.
This idea that at the end of the day, God wins. At the end of the day, God is the one who holds up the universe. And that gives us tremendous power and hope, I think. And I think people who really get a sense of that and also feel a calling into hard places. Obviously, it's not for all of us, and sometimes the hardest places beside a hospital bed, or, you know, we all have different kinds of hard places in our lives. But for those who feel a calling to a place like North Korea, they go because they know that God has it. They know that at the end of the day, He is the one who's ultimately in control. Heidi Linton is one of the people that I talked to about her work in North Korea. She was actually the last American to leave when the Trump administration's travel restrictions on North Korea came in. She hopes to get an exemption to those and be able to go back. There's a provision for that, but it's a little bit of a process. So she was the last American to come out at the end of August, just before the new rules went into effect September 1. And she, you know, it's like her 54th trip there or something. She's been working there for 20 years. And what she said is, these are end of the road places where we work. And they are literally hard to get to, but they are also places that no one steps into if we don't. And it's just that kind of, that's the heart of that courage that you're asking about, I think, is that people recognize no one else is going to do this. I don't really have much to be afraid of because I know that God is before me, God is behind me, God is around me, and I know that He's calling us to serve these people. So I think it's both a obvious help, a practical help. They are Heidi Linton's group, Christian Friends of Korea. Interestingly, they use Christian in their name. The regime knows that they're Christians. They're not doing outright evangelism because the regime would forbid that. But what they are doing is providing water systems, and they're running some immunization programs. They're helping with tuberculosis, which is very involved treatment program. They're involved in that, and they just recognize that they're providing a service. And they also are providing a witness as they are that otherwise you would not have in a place like North Korea right now.
I want to sort of maybe pan back and look at what's going on in the world in general. You have many different countries. You mentioned some of the EU countries that are becoming Islamic demographically, and inevitably going to become Islamic politically as well. I mean, that's the natural ramification of the demographics. But what I find to be, well, strange, I suppose, on the one hand, but really troubling, is that it seems to me that most people in the West are now buying into a narrative that Islam is a religion of peace and tolerance, that Christianity is a crusader religion, and therefore there seems to be this unhealthy alliance between a liberal liberals and between illicit Islam, because Christianity is the one force that must be dominated or the one force that must be eradicated. And that has ramifications not only with respect to the soft persecution of Christians in the West, but also with respect to the fact that the persecution of Christians in the East is squarely in the blind spot of the West.
Right. We definitely see it. And I guess I think one of the ways that we sort of counter it is just by what I was describing. We counter it by continuing to do the work that God calls us to and continuing to be a witness in spite of both the soft persecution and the hard persecution. Easy to say that, hard to do it. I mean, one of the recent examples that comes to mind as you were talking is we've had a situation in Iraq now for 3 years since ISIS invaded the middle of the country very forcibly, very violently, with obvious premeditation, pushed the Yazidi people and the Christian people, the non-Muslim populations of Iraq, out of their homelands. You have all sorts of bodies around the world who have declared that a genocide. We now have a situation where militarily the area has been liberated from ISIS. Very, very few of the people there have been allowed to return home. And what's shocking, what's truly shocking, because we have millions of dollars going into Iraq. I mean, you and I could spend a whole hour talking about all the different ways that American federal dollars are going into Iraq right now. None of it has reached the Christians who were displaced by ISIS. And I say that, like, I normally would want to be really careful before I said it, but that's true. The people living in displaced camps have been supported by Catholic and Protestant relief groups for these 3 years. They are now looking at tremendous need to repair infrastructure in their homes in order to go back. There is plenty of money flowing into Iraq, but the humanitarian aid money that could be used to help them is going in through the UN, and the UN is not applying it to their areas, to their particular villages. We should be doing it ourselves, and not jimmying around with UN bureaucracy, and we aren't. And it seems to me that's a place where we have a great strategic interest. We have an obligation to our men and women in the military who fought there not to make their fighting there in vain. And we have an obligation to the Iraqi people because we came in and we invaded their country and they have suffered tremendously as fallout from that invasion. So that's on the one hand. On the other hand, you have a tremendous humanitarian crisis that has unfolded in just the last few weeks in Myanmar or Burma, where the Burmese army has been forcing out of their homes Rohingya Muslims, a very specific ethnic religious group that has been highly persecuted. Christians have also been highly persecuted in Myanmar. But they have run hundreds of thousands of them out of their homes in the last week. And the State Department gave them $32 million last week with out hardly a blink of an eye, very easily. And I think it gets at what you're talking about. In the bureaucracies of the U.S. government, as well as we see in our educational institutions, we see with media, we see many of our cultural institutions, it is very acceptable to help a Muslim or a Buddhist or a Hindu persecuted minority. And I don't want to at all make light of the fact that they are being persecuted, because I think that is the case here with Burma, and there have been real atrocities there. But to quickly come to their aid while for 3 years not coming to the aid of Christians in Iraq is the most blatant example I know of what our ideas are about Christianity and about Islam. What we do about that, it's a hard question. And I think, I'll speak frankly that I expected the Trump administration, I expected the State Department under Secretary of State Rex Tillerson to do more than they've done. They are allowing a bias to continue there that is very much an Obama-era bias. And it's puzzling. It's strange. I don't know why that's happening. But it is a problem that I think we will need to attack straight on, you know, and showing from history and showing the realities on the ground that Christianity, for the most part, is not a crusader religion, and is something that helps people instead of harms people. And then we will have to continue to exhibit that indeed as well. And I see that happening all the time. I see the church being the church in the hardest places. I see the way that Christians in Iraq have cared not only for one another, but have cared for Muslims who've been displaced and have cared for Yazidis who've been displaced. And I think we will have to keep doing that and in some ways leave the story up to the Lord and pray and work toward His, you know, making it clear who His people are and what it is that they stand for.
Yeah, beautifully said. I love the cover of your book. They say we are infidels. There's the noon at the very top of the book. And I want you to talk to people a little bit about what that represents. I actually wear that on my lapel, so mm-hmm. A lot of people will ask me about it. This really represents the solidarity that you and I have in standing with people who are Christians all over the world, but particularly in the Middle East, who have had their homes, their churches taken away, who have seen that symbol on their home. So for us, it's a statement of solidarity for ISIS and other Muslim groups. It is a term of derision.
That's right. And it has become, as you say, a symbol of solidarity for others. The noon is simply, you know, in the Islamic alphabet, which is very different from our own, but it is the sound or the letter N. It would be equivalent to, in Arabic, it has been used to symbolize Nasariya, which is Nazarene, is where the word is coming from, and what a term that Muslims often use for Christians. It's a descriptive term, but it has come to be something of a term used as a mocking term, particularly by groups like ISIS. When ISIS came into Mosul and they chased the Christians out of the neighborhoods where Christians had dominated, you know, really back almost to the time of Christ, after they emptied their homes, they went through and spray painted. I've seen a number of these. They spray painted the Nun on the corner of the house. They wanted it to be known that these had been houses of Christians. They often came back and desecrated the homes. They would also spray paint slogans for jihadism below them. They came back and sometimes bulldozed the homes, sometimes just, I've seen houses where they went through, it looks like they went through and sprayed oil on the inside of the house like you would from a gasoline tank or a propane tank or something, sprayed a kind of oil or a kind of flammable liquid, and then they torched them. And so the houses are still standing to some extent, but they're completely uninhabitable. And the noon has just come to symbolize basically how ISIS has made the Christians suffer. I think it's interesting that we in the West and a number of Christians in the Middle East have taken it up as a symbol of solidarity, as you say, in a way of standing with them, because the Christians actually came to wear it proudly. And it's really important, Hank, to underscore that, because many of us, you know, I think if I were in the same shoes and I were forced at gunpoint to leave my home and leave everything behind, what would I do next?
We'll pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with journalist Mindy Bells in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and CRI's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI in the battle for life and truth, and receive your copy of They Say We Are Infidels, On the Run from ISIS with Persecuted Christians in the Middle East, as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888 888- 7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back after a quick break and more of the Hank Unplugged podcast interview with journalist Mindy Bells on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. The history of Islam is one of wanton carnage and horrific oppression, and it has been whitewashed beyond recognition by our politically correct elites. According to credible sources, 120 million Africans, 80 million Hindus, 60 million Christians, 10 million Buddhists have been slaughtered in the name of Islam. And that doesn't include the millions of Muslims killed by other Muslims. Islam is the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel. Read Hank Hanegraaff's stunning book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. Receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. What is one of the greatest lies in the history of the world? That Islam is a religion of peace. To suggest this goes against all that is politically correct and fashionable in the Western world today. Yet truth has always been divisive, and if we don't wake up, the long-term consequences could be unthinkable. That's why we're offering They Say We're Infidels, On the Run from ISIS with Persecuted Christians in the Middle East by Mindy Bells. To be a Christian in Iraq and Syria is to live in mortal danger. Churches are bombed. Pastors murdered, children kidnapped. Receive your copy of They Say We Are Infidels as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. Welcome back to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. In the book, They Say We Are Infidels, On the Run from ISIS with Persecuted Christians in the Middle East, author Mindy Bells writes, "Slashing and burning its way through the Middle East, ISIS captured the world's attention in 2014 with horrific video footage of its militants beheading victims. To Western onlookers, this aggression seemed to come out of nowhere. Yet this clash was inevitable, the result of an unheeded war the extremists had been waging for years." To receive your copy of They Say We Are Infidels as our appreciation for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with journalist Mindy Bells.
If I were in the same shoes and I were forced at gunpoint to leave my home and leave everything behind, what would I do next? I might be tempted to go and hide somewhere. I might be tempted to just get away from my Christian brothers and sisters because they would endanger me. And this has not been the response of these Christians at all. They have stuck together. I was at a worship service early this year where I expected there to be several hundred people. This was in northern Iraq, an area where many of the displaced Christians have been living. I know how hard that life is for them, and I expect them to be discouraged. And when I got to the church, the double doors of the church were wide open. People were standing on the landing, the portico of the church. People were standing out in the courtyard. You couldn't get everyone in. There were easily 1,000 people for this one church service. People were standing on their tiptoes. They wanted to see the front and see what was going on. They stand together. They're not afraid to be seen together. They're not afraid to be known by the symbol, and basically to count themselves worthy of suffering for Christ. And that's a powerful lesson.
It's interesting that you say that. I remember you talking about this in a broadcast I did with you, as well as reading this in your book, and maybe I'll set this up this way. I think Yaroslav Pelikan once said that tradition is the living faith of the dead. Traditionalism is the dead faith of the living. And it is traditionalism that gives tradition such a bad name. And the reason I bring it up this way is because a lot of Western Christians look at Eastern Christians and they say, you know what? These are Christians that are mired in sort of a tradition that has little to do with evangelicalism in the West, and therefore they're not really Christians at all. They're following a dead liturgy. They don't have a vibrant faith. And I think you found that that is not exactly how it is.
Right. I mean, that was my own presupposition when I started going to Iraq. You know, I went to Iraq for the first time in 2002. We all kind of knew that a war with Iraq was coming. I was in the Middle East. I was actually in Syria and had the opportunity to go there. And I went, mostly spent time with the Kurds and some Arabs during that time. I don't know that I encountered any Iraqi Christians on that first trip. When I went back after the war started, it was, as I mentioned, with the Iraqi Christian named Insaf Safu. But I was going because she was an Iraqi who was returning, and I wanted to see what Iraq looked like to her through her eyes. To my shame now, I admit, I was not going because she was a Christian. I did not have a clue, really, of what this Christian population in the Middle East actually looked like. And I think that was because I was reading things through my own Western lens. I mean, for me, as someone who was born into the Methodist Church and later became a believer through Baptist Church and other organizations, Campus Crusade, Bible study, things like that, I had an idea of sort of the old denominations in the United States being the dead ones, associating them with dead religion. And I think as a result, that's what I thought of when I thought of the old churches in the Middle East. There's a really interesting history there, particularly with Iraq and some of the other countries of the Middle East, that in fact, you know, they split off from the church in Rome early on after the time of Christ's death and resurrection. And they became very isolated. This was over a theological dispute over the nature of Christ. Some of them attended the Council of Nicaea in 325, where the Nicene Creed was written. Some of them were booted from it, not welcomed there. They became a very isolated church, and they remained that way in some cases into the late 20th century. The Chaldean church, for the most part, was not reunited with the Catholic Church in Rome, even though that is its traditions, its liturgy were all very similar to the Catholic Church. It did not come back into, let's say, fellowship with Rome until the early 1990s. And so one of the beautiful things about this isolation and this division, if you want to call it that, is that the church sort of preserved itself as it was very much cut off from some of the modern liberalizing things that we have seen work destruction in the Western church. And so when I finally started actually worshiping with Iraqi Christians, actually attending their services, I was so surprised. And when I sat down with some of the bishops, I had a very memorable breakfast one morning with the Syrian Orthodox Bishop of Aleppo, a man who was kidnapped and killed early on in the war. But he basically, I said, tell me your story. And what he did was he told me his testimony, told me what Christ meant to him and what the gospel meant to him. And I was so struck with how it would be what he was saying is something that we would consider an evangelical testimony in the United States. And I was hearing it from someone who could trace his church tradition back to the second and third century.
I think this is one of the problems, Mindy. I mean, I think that I sometimes talk about biblical literacy, but I think we have an attendant problem, and it is the fact that we are historically illiterate as well. So often we do not know the history of the Christian church, and as a result of that, we have prejudices that divide us as opposed to becoming an opportunity for uniting us. There's so many things that you've talked about that I want to touch on. I suppose I want to get back to Burma or Myanmar. I spent a fair amount of time in Yangon and other places in Myanmar. And a lot of people in the West, and even in places like South Korea in the East, see this as an opportunity to be a replica of what happened in South Korea. South Korea was a military state for a long time, and now it is this thriving capitalistic democracy, and many, many people are investing in Myanmar thinking that the same thing could happen there, that Christianity could really thrive there. And so they're building businesses there and investing capital there. And yet, as you point out, there is a tremendous amount of bigotry against various religions and a way in which people are trying to convert by sword as opposed to propagating the faith by word. Maybe you can talk about that sort of macro issue. Christianity is a religion that is not a crusader religion. It advances by word and not by sword. And to the extent that it does advance by sword, it is in direct conflict with the worldview that Christ gave us.
Right. Well, I think that the situation in Myanmar has been one that's been going on for a long time. And even though we have seen, you know, we restored relations with the military junta that's ruling there after they agreed to hold elections and to elect a parliament. We saw Aung San Suu Kyi, the longtime opposition leader, actually become a leader in that country and a member of parliament with full standing. And these are remarkable developments. And I think, as you said, we all hoped that we would be seeing some kind of transition along the lines of what happened in South Korea 60 plus years ago. But we weren't invested in the same way. We were sort of cheering from the sidelines. We weren't, as a country, as our own military, as our own our humanitarian apparatus, we weren't investing. And I look at what we did in South Korea, which is really a remarkable example, the way that we came in. We provide, you know, we had 30 and 40,000 soldiers on the ground there following the Korean War. That's a presence that has continued to this day. It might be a little bit lower than that right now, but we still have a very strong military presence there. We don't talk about that. We don't debate about that. And yet, you know, we debate about putting 10,000 more soldiers in Afghanistan. And I don't know that we have to have a full-on military presence, but it takes that to affect and support the kinds of changes that we're talking about, the big picture that you're talking about. So we don't have a military investment in Myanmar. We don't. Another thing we did in South Korea is that American businessmen, British businessmen were really encouraged to come in and to work alongside some of the fledgling businesses that were getting started in South Korea after the Korean War. Those businesses have become Samsung, they've become LG, they've become, you know, names that are on your cars and your refrigerators. And that's because they had a real early on heavy lift investment. It's going to take that. And in this country, we seem to get really bogged down in political debates that assume that we are, we're doing too much. We can't be the world's policeman. That's something you always hear by those who don't want to make those kinds of investments. Well, the other side of it is that it seems like to me, it's more a question of when are we going to be the world's policeman? Are we going to be it early on when we can make really positive investments that will help to get these countries standing on their feet and give individuals real freedom? Or are we going to come in and be the world's policeman at the end of the day when instead they have hatched oppressive governments that have grown jihadist groups that have begun attacking the West again, and we find that we have to go in and do mop-up operations? I just think that that's where we are in the world right now, that we, the United States, have really pulled back in the kind of engagement, the kind of involvement that we did post-World War II, post-Korean War, and instead we are trying to do kind of piecemeal things that don't, frankly, seem to be working very well.
I'm thinking about what happened back in the 7th century where Muhammad orders all infidels to be driven from the Arabian Peninsula, and the fact that today you have the Grand Mufti of Saudi Arabia saying it's necessary to destroy every single church in the whole of the Arabian Peninsula. I bring that up, particularly with your background and your travels. It seems like when you have the Grand Mufti of one of our allies making that kind of a statement, it seems like that would be front page news. I mean, that would be something that we would be talking about. And yet, for the most part, it seems to me that not only secularists, but Christians are just yawning.
Yes. In a lot of quarters, they are. And I think that speaks to the weakness of the church and the weakness of our Christian witness in public life in the West, in Europe, in the United States. Europe and the United States are in very different places right now, but I think we are prone to that. And Islam will come in and fill in any vacuum.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. To listen to this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with journalist Mindy Bells in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And if you like what you're listening to, be sure to leave a review on iTunes. If you'd like to stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute in the battle for life and truth, and receive as our thanks for your gift the book They Say We Are Infidels, On the Run from ISIS with Persecuted Christians in the Middle East, or any of the other resources mentioned on the broadcast today, just call our resource consultants now at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to us at CRI P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. So rapid and pandemic has been the decline of biblical literacy and spiritual discernment that our once unimaginable post-truth culture is effectively becoming an anti-truth culture. While the sun is setting on the Western Church, Islam is now the fastest growing religion in the world. This means that it's not simply enough to be aware of this threat. Christians need to wake up, stand up, and speak up. This means being able to counter the outright lies about Islam that otherwise will go unchecked with horrendous consequences. And that's what Hank Hanegraaff's book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, will enable you to do. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI. Make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. What is one of the greatest lies in the history of the world? That Islam is a religion of peace. To suggest this goes against all that is politically correct and fashionable in the Western world today. Yet truth has always been divisive, and if we don't wake up, the long-term consequences could be unthinkable. That's why we're offering They Say We're Infidels, On the Run from ISIS with Persecuted Christians in the Middle East by Mindy Bells. To be a Christian in Iraq and Syria is to live in mortal danger. Churches are bombed, pastors murdered, children kidnapped. Receive your copy of They Say We Are Infidels as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org.